I don't think it should take too long. I've asked them to be on the call just for whatever questions you all might have, and they're happy to answer any of those questions. And Brent was, he said he'd be here, but I don't, he might have forgotten now that it's warmer. He's probably thinking of what he can put in the ground right now. Mm-hmm. So we do have a quorum. And let's see, are you the vice chair, Joel?
I am.
So
start.
I'll click these guys off mute too. And hey, can you guys hear me, Ryan and Val and Mike?
Yeah, we can. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, so we've got a quorum here, and the only thing on the agenda is just discussing this proposal. So we're going to kind of go through that. I'll turn the time over to Joel to try to open this up. I don't think we need to do
pledge and a prayer.
Pledge and a prayer, Joel.
Okay, all right. We'll just skip then down to item number two, which is, well, we'll call the meeting to order, and item number two is a declaration of abstentions and or conflicts of interest by board members. Is there any agenda? Okay. Number three, consideration of Whittlestick's technology proposal and locate new source of water.
So we've had this for a couple of weeks now and looked at it, and I apologize that it didn't get on the agenda in our meeting on Thursday, but this at least provides an opportunity, I guess, to get together and have some lunch and more in-depth focus on this specifically as well. So I appreciate Val and Mike and Ryan for being on the call with us, and I just was telling our board members here that this provides a good opportunity for them to ask any questions about the technology or what this proposal looks like and what we're trying to accomplish here. So I guess any questions, first of all, from any of the board members?
I am kind of interested on how does it work? What kind of technology do you use to find the water?
Did you guys hear that? What the question was?
Yeah, I heard that. Val, did you hear that? We can either have Val or Mark answer that question about how the technology works.
We use two tools in tandem that we found to work really well together. One is radiometric gamma exploration, where we cover an area with gamma data with density high enough to generate a map covering the whole property. And the gamma signal is pretty interesting. It can tell you a lot of things. It's sensitive to geologic conditions, but it's also, if you get kind of a background gamma signal that's kind of the average in an area, and you see a lot of lows or dips in that, the gamma emissions are coming out of Earth's crust. It's a natural thing. You'll pick it up anywhere you go, at various levels. And when you follow the patterns of dips in that signal, it's often associated with groundwater because the water is absorbing gamma. So you have other natural rocks and things that emit the gamma signal, but groundwater absorbs it and lowers it. And so it's an indicator. It's a pretty good indicator for finding pockets or fissure zones that are full of water, because those tend to, it's like it's the aggregate gamma reading or the aggregate from the deep sources coming up through all that material that creates the really strong signals or the strong drops in the signal actually. Anyway, so we use that as an indicator when you learn to read the patterns, which I won't go into so much, but you use that as an indicator for where you have perspective places to drill, and then you don't just rely on that. You then go to step two, which is you focus in with a really good passive seismic technique that detects resonance. Now, resonance, microseismic resonance occurs on a continual basis because you have the Earth always moving due to Earth tide effect. That is, the tidal forces are causing it to the crust to rise and fall daily, and also with cycles tied to the moon tides. But the amount that is occurring here in North America is on the order of 8 to 12 inches, almost a foot, up and down every day, which is quite a lot of energy. And we detect the microseismic signals, process those, create a map of the subsurface where we can see the higher effective porosity zones. If it's in unconsolidated materials, you're going to detect the gravelly zones. If you're in consolidated, you're going to detect fractured rock systems, open fractures systems, and the places where you can have really high flow rates of water. So when we pinpoint a drill target into one of these, you get much higher flow rates than typical. And Val's put up a picture on here. This is one of the examples we use. Actually, this whole project has a history to it that goes back 5 or 6 years, where we located a well from different methods, and when we started developing these new tools that I'm telling you about, we decided to use this site as a test case because this well turned out to be a fantastic success with, as you can see up on the top of the screen there, 2,800 gallons a minute. I heard two different reports, and one was 25 and one was 2,800 gallons a minute that they got from that well in Idaho. And artesian, actually, as well. And one of the amazing things about it is that only 200 feet away you have an enormous spring. The purpose of this project was to find a source of water aside from the spring, because they were using the spring water and they were going to be required to filter it, which was going to be extremely expensive to build and maintain a treatment plant. So they drilled, and the target drilling location was only 200 feet away, and they end up with 2,800 gallons a minute artesian pressure, and the spring, which had been all flowing really continuously for decades and decades at 3,000 gallons a minute, you'd think, oh, the spring's going to go down. Well, it didn't. They watched the spring, and the spring's still putting out just as much water. Now, there's a fault system that runs right along underneath there, intersects right underneath the spring, underneath nearly where they put the well. You can see that if we had this new data set that I'm telling you about, which is the gamma, and we've got a map there on the surface with the blues and the reds. The blues show the lows, which is what we're more attracted to. And we would have put the well about 30 feet over into the heart of it, but they got their success anyway. But the wrap, which is that underground part you can see there, is detecting what, as I mentioned earlier, we're detecting the open fracture systems, and this one has really deep roots. It kind of hit the bottom of where we had our settings to go in this case, so it kind of bottomed out. But we don't see the bottom of it. But anyway, a deep-rooted fissure fracture system in a fault zone with a big storage tank almost sitting up on top of it. And anyway, and two totally different types of physics, the gamma and the passive seismic, and look what they showed in correlation, the really strong gamma drop right over that really strong section of resonance intensity down there in the wrap showing that. And so that was one of our case studies. We've been applying this since then, and we've had drill holes that have just turned out amazing. A number of them have been artesian, which are totally not expecting artesian flow, and they've just produced, we've had some produce up in the thousands of gallons a minute and some in the hundreds of gallons a minute. So we're seeing success with this, with these tools.
So you're just measuring gamma radiation coming up from the Earth, and then some seismic as well.
Yeah, we're making a map of that, as you can see there, and because that's the quicker method, we use it as our scouting tool. So if we have really large areas, I mean, we've done studies covering hundreds of acres at a time, and we can use that to narrow down large areas and then say, okay, we've got a number of really interesting anomalies and prospective areas that kind of stand out within the larger area. And then we'll go into those and focus in and do the more detailed RAP work, which stands for resonance acoustic profiling, if I didn't mention that. But the RAP seismic is requires us to get on the ground with the sensor. The gamma, you can walk around with that instrument and collect data, so it's faster and quicker to cover large areas.
Okay.
And narrow down your prospects.
Yeah, so for your site, we would cover the entire 350-acre study area that you're seeing on the screen. We'd cover that with the gamma because it's so much faster. Yeah. And then once we get a map,
it's important to note that green area, Paul first identified that, and that had 900 acres. And we're trying to keep this, you know, within a reasonable budget and time frame to do it. So what we did is we said, look, really what's happening here is you're faulting through that area. It has a north-south, or kind of a north-northeast-south-southwest orientation. And we said, look, let's cut it in half. Let's cut the study in here in half and just spend our time and effort on one side of the road that isn't encumbered by a lot of utilities or private ownership. You know, it's one big private owner there, Nicholas property. But it's all on one guy's property. And apparently Paul reported that you got a good relationship with him. So, I mean, we've narrowed the site down from 900 acres to 350 acres. We're looking for those deep faulted zones that exist. We know they exist there, and we believe they have a lot of water. And what we're trying to do is we're going to identify them, and then we're going to start pinpointing where to go to get that water. We kind of narrow it down so it's a little bit more of an attractive budget. Plus, it's not such a big elephant to eat one bite. We can kind of take it steps at a time, and that's the approach to this work.
And the way it's going to work, so we're going to spend 3.5 to 4 days walking this whole area with gamma, and then the map will then lead us to what, like the map you saw here, we will just focus in the blue areas where the gamma's blue. So let's just give a hypothetical that there's an area here. If you can see my cursor, I don't know if you can.
Yeah, we can.
But if you can see that, okay, so we focus maybe there, hypothetically, maybe there, and maybe there. And then what we would do is spend another 2 to 2.5 days just really honing in on the
on the fractures and the faulting. That's going to give us a 3D view of the depth of those fractures so that we can give you not only, you know, an area where the water is, but we can tell you how far down you need to drill.
So, Val, I know when we talked on the phone as well, when we talked about this with our board, we really were looking at potentially being further out towards the basin because we knew that there were successful wells towards Weco, which is, you know, a little bit further north and west out towards the basin more. And maybe if you could just touch on the reason why you thought it would be good that we focused within this area.
Well, the reason is we looked at USGS maps. We don't have one in this proposal here, but we took all the geologic information we had or was available to us as we kind of looked at it. And keep in mind that is that called the Walla Valley? Is that what that valley is called?
It's the Escalante Valley.
Escalante.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of water to it. It's a big bathtub. But what we wanted to do is try to help you find a, you know, a deep-rooted fault zone that you can tap into and have minimal effect on either, you know, the Cedars Valley or the valley to the west. And the USGS maps show a lot of faulting through that zone, that purple zone that we've got highlighted there. And so again, and we decided, why cover both sides of the road? If the faults run north-south, let's just get on one side of the road and let's focus and find some good locations. Now, we've kind of budgeted. It says on the left side of the page there, where it says RAP, it says detailed 3 or 4 potential well sites. I mean, we hope to find, and I'm sure there's about a half a dozen faults that cross through that area, but we hope to find and locate them, and we can't determine how much water, but we can kind of determine from the relative strength of the anomalies. We can find this zone, this site is better than this site, and we'll rank them. We'll say, okay, here's 3 or 4 well sites that look promising, and this is the number one, this is number two, this is number three. I don't know if I hope I answered your question.
Yeah.
I have a couple of questions. Is there a way to determine, is that far enough west? Is it out of our basin?
Yeah, I drew in that orange line, and they've added that
okay. The orange line is our basin, then.
Yeah,
okay.
That's the basin divide.
And then
according to water rights.
Okay.
I don't know about, I mean, groundwater.
Reality.
And they've literally just put a line on a map.
Yeah.
That's what they
okay.
do.
The other thing, if BZI is cooperating, you know, with the costs and whatnot, I thought we were trying to locate something on their property that we would share the costs and whatnot. So, how's that going to work if it's on Nichols instead of out further?
We still share the costs. I mean, they wanted the well to be in this area, and they don't own this property. This, again, is Frank's, which I think he actually just really sold to, what's his name up the canyon that's mining the gypsum?
Lim.
I think that he
may have just sold a whole bunch of dirt out there.
Yeah, I think he may have just sold that to him, and so I think that he does own further over here, but that may be something that I wanted to bring up too. We may want to consider is and ask these guys, this question is this whole area need to be done, or do we want to split this in half and move some of this over here?
I think the further that we can get away from that red line, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Is my take, just because, yes, it is. And again, I'm just looking at it as strictly state boundaries, right? Port of entries, right? Is the further, I mean, and the state's clearly just put that line at an approximate line, right? Just like, I mean, Highway 56, well, somebody decided to build a road there, right? And so the further we get away from that line, the less it's going to involve the 73 and more in the 71. And if we're trying to be maybe more invested in the 71 water kind of thing, that, you know, I think maybe further to the left might be better.
Because the city's doing a similar thing, and step two would be to transfer your water rights to that, and if it's still in the same basin, is it just, it's not really going to help us if it, if the state won't acknowledge it's out of our basin? I'm just asking the question.
So I know that you can, like if you were to drill a well right on the line, you can have rights from both basins. So there are people that do that, so they can, you know, basically pull water rights from both basins.
Cheaper rights from one side or the other.
Sure, you know, whatever. But for our purpose, you know, I tend to agree a little bit with Spencer. You know, we're trying to, we don't want to have any negative effect, or we want to try and help the effect of what's happening in our basin. And hopefully what Val mentioned is that somehow they're not connected, but in a lot of ways, you know, they sometimes
are. Even if you took that bottom right half and flipped it over the exact same amount of acreage, it'd still be further north and west where we kind of need it, right?
Yeah.
You know, let me just offer this thought. You know, Mike found a study not too long ago that was done in this area that they looked at, like, I don't know, 90 or 100 wells, and the highest producing wells were those that were in fractures, and they're taking into account of
deep volcanic rock, fractured faulted volcanic rock, and they were drilling down to 1,000 feet. This comes from the 2013 hydrogeological study by the Iron Springs Corporation of the around the city of Enoch and parts of Cedar Valley.
And what's interesting, you know, you can go out and drill in those valleys and get in those alluvial deposits where, you know, people think there's really good water out there in the bathtub. And but you get into these bigger, deeper fractures, and you will produce a lot of water, and it won't have as much impact on surrounding wells and aquifers, because it's just a fact that those fractures might help for you. But when you drill into a fractured rock, you get sometimes as much as 100, 500 times more water than you do if you drill.
We're talking about deeply rooted zones, so they have what I call deep roots to them. And a lot of times once they're tapped, you see the water level rise clear up to near the surface in the well, or become artesian. After you tap something that's 400, 500, 600, 700 feet deep, that's pretty amazing. So there's a lot of water down, and sometimes they're beyond, they're 1,000 feet deeper.
But, it's important to note too, Mike, I want to just emphasize this, you could speak intelligently about this. Our rap day will go down, now we don't plan to go as deep, but deeper you go, less resolution you have with your data set, because you're sort of like way through it. But we're going to look down a couple thousand feet here, and that's not that we think you're going to drill a 2,000 foot well. But what we're looking for is to place your well on top of a deep root. Water, as Mike was saying, as the earth expands and contracts due to the gravitational forces of the earth, it's like you're all familiar with the ocean tide, the rise and fall in a 12-hour cycle. And we can predict what those ocean tides, they rise and fall. It's like your chest breathing in and out. Well, think about that. As the earth expands out and contracts and expands from those gravitational forces, just like you're just breathing in and out, stresses build up in the crust of the earth. And when those stresses give, it creates tremors or earthquakes. You know, we don't feel it most of the time, but periodically we feel it.
Well, most of the energy is microseismic and below our detection.
Right. But what I'm trying to tell them is that just think of it, when you look at it expanding, contracting, the cracks are kind of vertical. And our experience is we've been hitting these vertical cracks, and when Mike says, oh, this is an artesian well here that produces 2,800 gallons per minute, I can show you some videos right now if you want to see. We've hit like four or five wells in the last 6 months that have no artesian water. One of us up in San Pete County where they were getting only like a typical well would get five to 20 gallons per minute. Well, we went up and sided the well, and It was only how big a diameter hole was it, Mike?
I can actually show it as we talk if you want on the webpage. The well log's on there, but basically they drilled this well, and I'm going to be the presenter. Let me get my screen up and then I'll talk here.
They drilled this 4-6-inch hole, and
it's a 6-inch hole, and they're down about 250 feet or so, and they go, hey, you've already got 30 gallons a minute, which is just great for this area. This is a difficult area. A lot of people drill in dry holes, or you know, like Val said, 5 gallons or something. So this one, let me just show it to you. Because the well log's on here. You see all these wells in this kind of high mountain valley. They're all over the place. Now, this one that we sighted, this is a big, this kind of a ridge here, and this is up probably at least 100 or 200 feet above the valley over to the east. So we're up the hill a ways. And they continued, the owner decided, based on our information and our recommendation, he decided not to stop with 30 gallons a minute. He owned quite a bit of land. He decided to keep going, and he was really happy he did, because they got down, only made it to 380 in the end, and he came to the owner, the driller, and he said, I've got so much water pressure, it's unbelievable, and we can't go any further. But what he tapped into, I'll show you in a minute, our data
what,
on this one.
What is that? What is driller? Under the rock pipe, what is that? I can't read the writing. Does that say cobbles?
Cobble or what?
Yeah, cobbles and clay.
Okay.
Potpourri, right? It's like a mix, so there. And then he gets conglomerate from 160 to 380. Well, what happens is, I'll show you what he actually got into. I was prepared to show this to some of the things from the Iron Springs study. But we got all kinds of case studies now, but I'll show you this one. So this became our drill target after collection of a bunch of data. He actually had a couple good looking ones, but this became number one right here. Partly chosen based on this and partly chosen based on the low gamma was just incredible. It said, oh, you probably got some deep fracture systems, really good ones, and sure enough, the RAP picked them up really strong. In fact, when you come across some of these, you can see the slope there. There's probably some faulting, some pretty complex faulting down in there. But so they're going through silt and cobbles and then conglomerate, and this is where he had 30 gallons a minute, and he had to make a decision whether to keep going or not. I told him this looked fantastic down here, and he ought to at least drill to 400, so he paid another 15 grand and he went on. And what happened is he went from 30 gallons a minute as he tapped this fracture system down here, and that's when it became artesian and started spilling out, and he had unbelievable water. Here's a picture of it here. Let me go back to that well log really quick because the drillers wrote in the comments section. And this is Keith Polson. I've had people tell me he's the best driller in the state, but he's quite experienced. This is the best well we're aware of in the valley. It pumped a full 6-inch pipe of water before we cased it. So it was totally maxed out. They couldn't go beyond what the size of the hole was limiting it to. But they did a pump drawdown test. They raised the pumping by 100 gallons. Several times, he told me later on the phone, and they did a calculation based on that like they often do, to give them a rough estimate of what the capacity would have been if they'd had a big enough hole to pump it all out. And it was only dropping, he said, by like an inch every time they'd increase another 100 gallons a minute on their pump. And his calculation came out at 4,000 gallons, is what he told me. So we're tapping these things that just light up. This is a really focused, small, or I should say short, wrap line. Sometimes we're running these for
it's like the oil fields, you know.
Hundreds and hundreds of feet, looking for
oil shooting in there.
Places that have good targets. This one's just all over the place, good targets.
Well, the point that I was trying to make, and thank you, Mike, the point I was trying to make is fractures are a big deal, Paul. You know, you got to get into the fractures. That's where the water is. That's where the pressure is, and that's what we're looking for. And we can find it with our techniques. We can find those fractures, and we'll know if they got water in or not based on the gamma signal where it drops and so forth. And we're going to put you on some good potential locations.
Do you have any overlay of where you think those faults are right now, currently, or they just, is it just kind of general in some of the geologic maps that you've looked at?
Do you mean talking about this?
No, I'm talking about our project. The concern that a lot of us have is knowing how many wells have been drilled in that area from the iron mine over the years and how many have been dry. And granted, you know, we know that they were not using the same science to find a fault or a fracture, but there's just been, throughout that whole mountain range, a lot of holes that have been drilled, and, you know, I guess a similar story to what you're looking at from wells in the San Pete Valley, they're little to nothing, and so that's where, I guess, where we do have concern as the board is, you know, we want to make sure that we get something that is long-lasting, it's going to be there.
I don't know what you guys thought, Mike.
Well, let me say this. I can appreciate that. We can't make any guarantees. We don't know what we're going to find until we get out there and do it. But I'll tell you what this geophysical technique does. It takes the risk out of it. Our experience, I've got 40 years of engineering. And Paul, you've known me from probably my beginning. Paul grew up with some of my kids. But I drilled dry wells, and it's depressing. And but since I've been involved with these techniques, these geophysical techniques, we don't have a failure. We don't have any failures that we know of. It's just reassuring that when the geophysical data shows anomalous features, and when you get two techniques, and that's why we're using two techniques. When two techniques, which use completely different scientific principles, suggest that there's water beneath your feet, it's highly probable there's water beneath your feet. And so rather than just going out there and guessing and drilling wells and being stressed out, we can know the depths. Just like Mike said to me, when he got a call, the guy said, we're getting 30 gallons per minute. You know, Mike's recommendation to the owner on that project is, hey, if you can go a little deeper, there's a lot more water there. And sure enough, the guy went a little bit deeper, and he's glad he listened to Mike. And so, you know, that, we can show you some more examples of that if you care.
One thing.
Do you guys?
You got a question. You got a question here, really quick.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
So just I got a couple of questions here. One is, do you know anyone here in the close region that does isotope testing at all?
I don't.
Okay. One of the concerns I think that we might have is you know, going much more than like 1,500 feet. Obviously, one is the energy cost on the withdrawal, but the other thing is just, you know, then we start getting into potentially older, dated water. You know, glacier age water kind of thing, and then water quality, you know, changing. I know that there's some deeper holes and stuff that have been done, and you know, you start getting into the glacier ages, and that water, the quality is down. The other question that I had was, would you see any issues if we were to move the study area further to the northwest? whether we were to keep the same acreage or whatever, but just move it a little further away from that red line. I mean, do you see anything geologically on the surface that would discourage us from doing that?
Mike, did you do a an initial kind of desktop of the that whole area? I think the real reason why we just wanted to keep within that one property, but personally, and Mike and Val, you can talk to this, but it wouldn't matter for us if you guys wanted to take some of the acreage that we put on the proposal and move it to the left.
Sure.
That's not an issue at all.
I mean, follow the same alignment of the road, realizing the road's nothing geologic other than, you know, if that's what we're looking at, is just, you know, take it up further as that green area kind of necks down the right side of the road. Just, and the only main reason is just try to get a little further away from that red line, you know.
Yeah. The only other thing he has identified that this is the most fractured area.
Yeah, that kind of goes back to my question is, do we really know where those fractures are? And it's right in line with what you guys are saying is, are those fractures, are they keeping us, tying us back towards Cedar Valley, or are there just the same amount of fractures further to the west?
Any idea that the...
Yeah, that's where I go back to Mike. I'm not sure.
Sorry, if you don't know,
I talked about the fractures. Where are the faults and the fractures? I think you did an initial desktop.
Mike, can you pull up? Can you take the screen back and can you pull up the geologic map? Or is that going to take too long to do?
Just a second.
Yeah. Okay. There's no problem in moving that study area around. Again, the reason that we placed it there is one was from you guys. You outlined the area, and we just said let's take the north side. That's one property owner, so we're dealing just with one property owner, and there was quite a bit of faulting through that whole area. Shifting it a little bit to the northwest wouldn't make a difference. It'd need to deal with more property owners, but that's your problem, not ours. So we can move it. That's not a problem.
Paul, do you know it? So, I mean, I think we're talking the same. So is that still Frank's going?
Yeah, it is.
So I'm pretty sure it is.
Frank owns that solar farm. Frank owns. It's still all Frank's property from what I'm looking at.
What if we just like, I mean, I'm showing this to all of you, but I mean, like, what if we were just to take this section here and just kind of take it up all the way to the end of the green and just kind of, then that way we're a little further away from the 73 boundary. We're still dealing with one property owner. I don't know.
If I'm clicking in the right spots, Frank owns almost everything up along the railroad track.
Yeah, he does.
Almost all the way to Echo, except for where he's leased out on this side to the fuel farm and stuff. Well, there's the fuel farm right there.
I mean, what's all the rest of you, all of your thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes me concerned, as long as we're not telling them to do it on a spot that they don't think geologically that it will work.
For how much more? Yeah, I think we need more. If we're just looking for them.
Yeah.
So as far as the direction or the proposal that's there, does the board want to just stick with the similar type of acreage?
Yeah.
And see if we can't shift that further to the west. So basically we're looking to approve the same amount, right around the 21,500 that's proposed.
And I would almost just say let Paul... I mean, if we move forward with this, let Paul coordinate that with Willistead, but he knows our intent, right?
Okay.
And that if we can, I mean, based on boundary or whatever, the one property owner, try to stay within that one property owner as far as permitting and stuff. But I guess the only other thing I would just say is, and maybe you all know about this and I don't, but like, have we talked to Frank about us doing this?
Yeah.
So do we... We might want to, before we actually get the data, just try to get an agreement in place, like right. saying...
That's Val's main concern, was like, hey, you know, if we find a good well, the landowner's going to switch on. And he knows what we're doing. He knows that we're going to involve Willow 6. And he's had... I can't remember if you guys did that well for him or if that was... what's his name from California?
Mark did that one.
And that's using the same technology, right? Mark Burr uses the same technology that you guys have?
That's correct. He's our partner.
Okay.
So you guys are partnered, like the same entity as this Mark Burr guy?
Pretty much. We've taken this now and kind of developed it. Mark's moved to Dubai. So Mark kind of gave us initially the techniques, and we've now refined them over the last year and a half. But Mark is a partner with Willowstick.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So he helped bring in technology, because previous to this, you guys did a lot of leak detections in dams and stuff like that. And was it a different type of technology, or what? How did you transition to where you're at now?
We're still doing that.
Still doing that, but is it a different technology?
Yeah, it's still a majority. Yeah, it's a different technique. The majority of our business still, because we built that over the last 15 years. But it's same. So we have three techniques: the Rapid Gamuts for finding water, the Willowstick, which we call the Willowstick technique, is more for seepage mapping and tracking and modeling at dams and mining and
farming. Yeah, some of these mines we're using all three of them now. But
true.
So this is my take.
But the Willowstick technique, for tracking seepage, is not very helpful in this kind of a study.
Yeah.
Unless you conditions were different, or we already had certain parameters met, like wells into water, and you know they're both into a fracture system, and you're trying to map how they're connected, that kind of thing.
So this is my take. I think this,
and just to give you a little bit more understanding of it. So when Mark first introduced us to these techniques, we went and did still tests with Mark, and we became really impressed. And then what we ended up doing is saying, okay, Mark, let's go full, but let's really start to map and model. And that's what we brought to this whole thing. Now, providing 3D modeling, providing mapping, providing the full-blown report writing. We do a lot of that in conjunction with Mike's expertise as a geophysicist to refine the data. Mike has done a lot with the algorithms. Is that what we call it, Mike, or the processing of it?
The processing of the graphs and the ability to put them into the 3D models and all that.
Yeah. And I think, Paul, if you remember, we did one for you and for CIC.
We can have them move forward. We have that agreement.
It was one of our first ones that we did. I think we provided you a report for that. It was one of our first ones.
Otherwise.
So we've come a long way, and the Eagles punches a hole. And now we're providing
away.
Survey report.
So what you're saying is you know Frank.
What we found is now we've contracted with Hillel City, with Enix City. We've done work for Logan, DWR, the Logan Fish Hatchery. I don't know if you guys saw the Cedar City. We just got contracted with Cedar City. Those require more formal reports that take time and modeling efforts that we put together. And so we've become more formal with how we report this stuff.
Okay.
So that formal reporting that you're saying, is that more formal than what you have included here in your proposal, or is that same formal format the same as what we'll get?
Might be good if you have the screen, maybe just to show them an example of one of our reports that they can see.
But they're doing all of those signs.
Yep.
Yeah, here's one that we did recently, about 100 acres of coverage around a hot spring site. We have a lot of other, we pull from some other publications, for example, on this study that someone did where they compared hundreds of wells all over the state of Pennsylvania, and they had some hydrogeologists that knew how ways to detect these fracture zones, and they were talking about how much significant increase they get in yield from the fracture systems and the wells that were specifically put into it versus their average yield. So I want to point that out too. We always include that in our reports with a reference to those publications at the end of it. Here's an example of a gamma map that ended up really showing a lot of correlations with some previous master's thesis geologic mapping that was done all over this mountain. And it actually, a number of master's theses were done in this place, a lot of geology, and they all came to a conclusion. They came up with two ideas about how the hot springs occurs here based on the range front faulting system intersecting this other fault system. And nobody had been able to map the range front fault. They just expected it was somewhere through this area. And we were able to see it in the gamma data. We were able to see how the intersection was taking place. It actually answered their long-standing question of where the source of the hot springs water came from, in their two theories that they had. There's an example report right there.
Just another thing too. You guys, this is where Mark Burr had a little bit of a struggle in Utah. He's not a licensed engineer. He's not a geologist. He's not a He's just a water witcher guy. And if you look on this report, Mike and I are professional. I'm a professional engineer. Mike's a professional geophysicist. And so when we do these things, and if you're a public agency or anything else, we've got the credentials. We know what we're doing, and we know why we're doing it, and we know how to do it. So just
there you go. Well, I want to be sensitive to these guys' time. We're about running up on time. So does anybody have any other final questions?
Well, what's your timeline? Like, if we were to move forward with this proposal, what would be your timeline of having a final report to us?
Yeah, well, so we're getting quite busy in April, but we can fit it. We can fit in as early as mid-April time frame. I mean, so if you could give us a week or two in advance, that'd be great.
Yeah, usually we're able to, within days of completion of a project, we're able to show some results over screen share with slides and things, and then we usually take a couple of weeks to get the report.
Okay.
You said you had 100% success rate too?
Some of the bigger projects, I think, are 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay. Oh, you're good.
I think you're good.
There's one final question. It was
What
is your success rate?
Wow, so far it's been 100%.
We have a lot of them out there that haven't been drilled yet that we've recommended, but the ones that have been drilled are all turning out.
We haven't had any drill at dry wells
for the drilling cost.
Yeah.
That's pretty good, though.
I mean, there's a case. where they chose not to go down and recommend it, but they stopped early, only 170 feet, and they were happy. It was just one little owner on a little 5-acre piece of property, and he's like, well, I got to save money. I'm happy with, you know, 20 or 30 gallons a minute. And on that piece of property, probably couldn't get much more than that. We expected he probably could deeper, but not if he stopped early. He still was in a fracture system, and he was happy because he got 20 gallons a minute and only had to go 170 feet. And they were having complications on the drilling, and the driller's like, do you want to keep going? Because our bit's stuck, and we got to decide how we're going to go forward. He goes, no, I'm done. So there's examples like that. How do you define success? But that's the lowest yield well I'm aware of that's been drilled so far after we sited it. Some of them are on small properties, so you don't have a lot to work with, but you still typically see good, better places versus, you can usually rule out like 80-90% of it and say, no, I did drill here, even on a 1-acre piece. So that's happened too.
As far as that goes too, like my conversations with Frank that have been involved with BZI and others, as we've talked about locating the wells, he's always said, I'm going to donate the full acre. He knows the benefit of having that line go across all his property. I don't really see that being a big issue, but I agree with what you're saying.
Right.
Just get the agreement done.
Yeah. For sure.
In the meantime, we can work on that.
Right.
Yeah.
So, do you make a motion?
I'll make a motion that we direct Paul Monroe to coordinate with Willistick to move forward with the proposal with the following changes or whatever. One would be is the study areas to be moved further northwest, a further distance from the 73 boundary, and keep the same study area or study acreage, and that we concurrently work with the property owner to get an agreement in place that if we do drill, that we're safeguarded. I know this is a long motion. That we're safeguarded on the well location, as well as the protection zone and adequate easements out to do a long-term plan of the water lines away from the well.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. So I'll coordinate with you guys, and we'll see if we can't. I don't know if you want to overlay some more of those fault lines, but yeah, just see if we can't move that a little bit further to the west. Thanks for hopping on with us, guys. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Hey, thank you. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Bye. Tyler motioned to adjourn, and I seconded.
Right. Yeah, I got that. Let's skip.
Turn that off now. I got in trouble for saying something. There we go. Likewise, because I'm talking to Frank or Lynch.